Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome once again to Sports Roundtable. My name is Bob Branco. Good to be with all of you today. Before we continue, and we do have a very special guest with us that I will introduce momentarily, but first, let me introduce the sports panel members that we have already. We start out with Mitch Pomerantz.
Good afternoon, good evening from beautiful downtown Pasadena. And Michael, you guys left here right at the perfect time. It is 91 degrees here today. They're expecting rain Thursday, but it's 91 today, and it feels like midsummer.
We are cloudy in the 50s. We are on the verge of a cold snap. There's going to be a dip in the jet stream this week. It's going to snow in northern New England and parts of the northern Midwest. It's going to be cold for a little while. Temperatures might get out of the low 40s tomorrow here in southern New England. Don Wardlow.
Hi there. We're looking at the 30s tonight, 20s night times by the end of this week.
And Reverend Michael Garrett.
And welcome. 58 degree, beautiful sunny day here in Missouri City, Texas, right outside of Houston. And we're going to get down to 40 degrees tonight.
We are expecting Luther King. Peter Alcho may not be with us. He said that there's a slight chance he will, but he told me to expect that he won't be there. So right now, let me thank those people who make it possible for Sports Roundtable to be made available. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer. Thank you very much for what you do. Peter from Canada, thank you for posting our shows up on a chat board on your line. Also, the media sources, thank you for airing us when you do. It is much appreciated.
In case he doesn't, I know Jackie, as Peter says, merci Jackie, for one of our people who keep Sports Roundtable going. And Bob will know all the details to that, but I think that was the only one he hadn't quite got to before he got knocked off, so
today has certainly acted like a Monday, and I think he's got our guest Bill Lee on a two-way with him, so we've lost both of them.
I thought he was in. I thought Bill was in. Oh, that's why you said Bob.
I had hoped Bill Lee might still be with us, but I wasn't going to introduce him because I thought that was Bob Branco's, you know, place to do that. But we don't have either one of them. So until we get back, Mitch Pomerantz, you got a game out there in Westwood tonight, the Oklahoma Sooners and the UCLA Bruins, a top 20, women's.
UCLA basketball game. I'm not quite into basketball mode, but I don't really know much about UCLA's basketball game. Oh, good.
Okay, there.
I am back. There was technical difficulties on my end. I don't know what happened. I will patch in our guest. Sorry about that, folks. This happens in the world of Zoom. And those of you who know Zoom appreciate what I'm talking about. I don't know where we're at with the introductions. Well, first of all, let me say hi to Trish and Brad, who are our streamers. Well, Brad's our streamer. Trish is our host. And our email address is bobbranco93@gmail.com. Stand by. You guys can chat for a minute while I patch in our guest, which is Bill Lee, former Red Sox pitcher. Let me get him now.
Yeah, I haven't been following. I barely got a chance after football yesterday, Don, to listen to about the last 10 minutes of the USC Manhattan men's basketball game. And defense was optional for Manhattan. USC scored 114 points in 40 minutes.
Holy cow. Yeah. Well, USC women.
There were several of those games over the weekend were college teams scoring 90 and 100 points. And one game, it was like 114 to 87. I was like, they must have been running.
USC won 114-83.
Yeah.
Not to interrupt, but we do. I was thinking about. Not to interrupt, but we do have our guest with us right now. I would like to welcome to Sports Roundtable, Bill Lee. He pitched for the Boston Red Sox between 1969 and 1978. And after the 78 season, he was traded to the Montreal Expos, which, according to Bill, was the worst trade in Red Sox history because we picked up a utility shortstop named Stan Pappy, who half the world never heard of. But we'll discuss that if we have time. Bill, welcome to Sports Roundtable.
Thanks for having me. And I said before, Houston, we have a problem, but I'm back.
You're back, yes. But like I said, it's all about Zoom. But here we are. That's the main thing. Bill, you were saying in a private phone conversation that we had that there were some little things that happened in the 1975 World Series between the Red Sox and the Reds that you felt were the catalyst for the Red Sox losing the series. If you want to go into that for a moment, that's really interesting what you were saying.
Well, it's the things that people don't recognize. In 62, the Giants beat the Dodgers in a playoff game, and the coach, it was for Alston, gosh, he was the guy who said that God protects drunks and third basemen. He was a manager for the Chicago Cubs. He moved the second baseman away from second, and they did not turn a double play when Harvey Keene hit the ball, and they ended up losing that ball game. In our ball game, in game two, Bench had hit me to right field to lead off the ninth inning. He had a bad shoulder, and Zimmer moved our second baseman out of double play position in game seven. And he had a double play ball, and we didn't. But people don't remember. Bernie Carbo died at third with less than two outs, and I died at third in the third inning with less than two outs. Those would have been the fourth and fifth run. These little teeny things that people don't remember, and that's why baseball is the greatest game ever played.
Bill, I think the Dodger coach was Leo DeLip.
I think it was Leo DeRozan. Leo DeLip. It was Leo DeLip. God protects drunks and third basemen.
Leo ought to know because he was probably a little of both.
Yeah, he had a pet poodle, I think. He had a wife and stuff like that, and he used to walk that white poodle around. Wrigley Field. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, he was a character. Zimmer, too. Zimmer was a character, too.
Zimmer was. Before we went on the air, for the folks who are listening now, Bill Lee was a senior when I started at USC, and Tom Seaver was at USC, and we had a class together, although I didn't meet him. He was a very quiet man, and I was very, very sorry he passed away much too young, but you know, he was one of the great pitchers of all time.
Yeah, he had a forested house in Connecticut. He got Lyme's disease because he had tomatoes, and he was out there, and he really took effort on him. I think he had Lou Bode's disease when he passed away, like Buckner. You know, a lot of ball players, they contact a lot of weird diseases. Look at the Phillies organization. All the Phillies that died in their 50s, Doug McGraw, you know, Real Cormier, Dalton, you look back, and I would love an investigation on Dow Chemical and DuPont over there in Philly.
Bill, you had three managers when you were with the Red Sox, Eddie Casco, Darryl Johnson, and Don Zimmer. What were your thoughts on all three?
Well, I had one manager. Two of them board managers. Eddie Casco would sit on a thing. He would chew a towel and pull little threads out and chew them up in balls and swallow them. And I said, I don't know if you can say this, but I said he was a towel-eating, wash-rag-shitting manager, you know, and he hated me because I wore a Rolling Stones tongue shirt in spring training in 72 when Nixon, McGovern was running and against Nixon, and it was Lick Dick in 72, and he took exception to that. And if you look at my record, I was only 7-4. The year before, I was 9-2. And the next year, I won 17 games. And we lost to Detroit by a half a game that year.
And that was the year that if there were no strike, we might have pulled it off.
Exactly. People don't remember. Harper, Lee, opening day, it was Teon against the left-hander, you know, they had McLean and the other guy.
Lolich.
Lolich. So Lolich is pitching. Harper leads off with a base hit, steals second. Aparicio singles him home, hitting the ball the other way. Yastrzemski hits a ball in the gap between Stanley and A-line, and he's running with his head down into third. Aparicio slips rounding first, and he gets back, and Yastrzemski runs in. We get him out. We don't score again. We lose 3-2. Next to the last game of the season, the clinching game that gave him the game-and-a-half lead, that was the game they did the exact same thing on a rainy, misty day. See, we're not in charge. This life is like a Stephen King novel, Under the Dome. You know, there's a bunch of aliens running our lives, and now it's called artificial intelligence.
I agree with that statement.
Boy.
Speaking of artificial intelligence, I read an article this morning about the two Cleveland Guardians, now ex-Cleveland Guardians, I'm sure, who threw pitches and using prop bets, the gamblers made lots of money. And the article indicated that in Class A's case, he threw his first pitch low, and that's what the gambler bet. And in the case of the other fella, Gomez,
Ortiz,
he threw a pitch outside, and again, the gambler made money. Now, that would assume that these guys had pinpoint control, and you being a left-hander, I'm not saying that didn't happen. I suspect it did, but these guys must have had good control. And an umpire who kept a normal strike zone instead of widening it, as half of them do today. But you have any thoughts on these guys throwing quote unquote bad pitches to make money?
Wow. Well, Ciotti in the 1919 Black Sox scandal, he hit the first guy to say that the fix was on, and it's been going on forever. They banged the trash can in Houston.
Yep.
My theory is if you weren't cheating, you weren't trying. You know, I hurt my arm and I said, what else did I say? I said, the California Angels, if KY gel went off the market, they wouldn't have a pitching staff.
Mitch, I heard that these guys may face up to 65 years in jail. I heard that this afternoon.
Here's the part I don't get.
Going away?
Between this scandal in baseball and the one in professional basketball, I mean, it really is beginning to show that there really needs to be a separation between gambling and sports. And you know, these aren't the first two incidents. There are going to be more.
Those pitches, from what I saw, that they only made about $7,000. Now, that pales in comparison to what their salaries are.
That's where I was going. In fact, I heard the thing was a little higher, was $12.5 million. But doggone it, if you're making $2-3 million, what in the world does $12.5 million even mean to you? Or $7,000?
Really?
If you're making $2-3 million, which each of these guys should have been making, the minimum, you know, for major league is, at, if it's not $1 million, it's got to be nearby. And these guys are
9,500 for me.
These guys aren't
9,500 for me.
Right. I hear you.
Well, both those pitchers must have been really happy to have normal umpires.
Can't you hear Pete Rose laughing right now?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
he should have been in the Hall of Fame, considering everything else that's going on right now.
I got him in the Hall of Fame in 2003 on a TV show with Alan Dershowitz and Jim Palmer versus Johnny Cochran and Bill Lee at Harvard. I got Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame. You can see it on ESPN number 2. It's out there, and they don't show it because they didn't want it to happen.
Bill, I don't know if you're aware of this. Pete lived out here, and there's a local radio guy who has been around for many years on KFI, And he went to a restaurant out in the San Fernando Valley where Pete Rose hung out. And apparently the owner of the restaurant had him brought him over and introduced him to Pete. And the first thing Pete said is, "I belong in a Hall of Fame." Apparently that was his stock line when he met someone new for the first time. I belong in a Hall of Fame.
Well, he's the biggest pain in the ass I knew outside of Reggie Jackson, you know, and, you know, the straw that stirs the drink, you know, but Pete had no chance. His first boss was named George Anderson. And then he plays for the Cincinnati Reds, and it was Sparky Anderson, which yep. was George Anderson, which was Rod Dedeau's bat boy. See,
oh, I didn't know that. I remember when Sparky played as a utility infielder. I didn't know he was Dedeau's bat boy. For those who don't know,
he was Dedeau's bat boy. He was the only guy that got the ball and brought him back. He gave him a freaking job because he was an honorable boy.
For those who don't know, outside of L.A. Or college baseball, Rod Dedeau was the longtime successful coach at USC. Successful baseball coach
of all time.
Absolutely.
He learned from John McGraw. He played for John McGraw. He played there. He got hurt. He came out, and for a dollar, he started a trucking business and doing really well. He, you know, Justin's still alive, still running it with his Terry and all the boys, and I'm still close to all the SCers, even though they won't put me in the Hall of Fame because I'm a Bolshevik.
The baseball diamond, the baseball field at USC is named Dedeau Field.
Yeah, Raul Justin Dedeau.
Mm.
Yeah, he was the best. He was, he was amazing. That was Billy Lee. That's what he called everybody else Tiger, but he called me Billy Lee.
Bill, what do you think of the state of baseball today with all the
Not
new
good.
Rules? Specifically, the two that I'm thinking about is the second base rule in extra innings and the new ball strike challenge that's being instituted next year in the major leagues, which I kind of like, but it kind of takes away from the responsibility of the umpires the way it was meant to be.
Exactly. Exactly. Fallibility is part of the game. Mistakes are part of the game. Being able to get around it and come back is integrity, you know, and guts and chutzpah. You know, it's just the rule of putting it. You can have a perfect game and lose it by putting an artificial guy, having a bunt sacrifice and a sacrifice fly ball. You could throw a perfect game and lose.
Wow.
What about the second base rule in extra innings? What's your thought on that?
That's the one. That's it. Don't put a guy at second base in extra innings. You play the damn game like they did. The greatest World Series since 75 was this World Series, and it had everything and had the best pitching I've seen by young guys in my life.
I remember one of the games Louis Tiant threw about 150 pitches.
Yes, in Cincinnati. And Dreesen flied out up against the fence. Or it could have been Griffey, but yeah, I remember that. He was lucky to get out of that ball game. He was gassed. How many people remember that he pitched game 5 and game 6?
Was it 5 and 6 or 5? Was it back to back? I know there was a rainy period.
3-day rain delay.
Yes. That's probably why that happened.
And I was supposed to pitch that game, and that's why we lost the World Series, because I would have won Game 6 easily, and he would have won Game 7.
I love it.
I thought Game 6 was the game that Carbo tied it with a homer and Fisk won it.
That's game, yeah, but 5 and 6, I mean. Yeah, he pitched in Cincinnati, then he pitched in Boston. That was 6. That was Carbo hit the 3-run homer. Pitch hit, and that was amazing. And then Fisk hit the ball off of Pat Darcy. Yeah.
Well, at the time, the Reds and the Dodgers were in the same division, and I was always rooting for whoever would beat the Reds because the Reds were something else in those days. They had.
So you were a Red Sox fan in '75, Mitch?
Only during the World Series. Only during the
That's
World
what
Series.
I mean.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Big Red Machine.
Bill, I want to ask you about. You're talking about. The new rule next year, and I don't agree, but my question to you is that either umpiring has gotten worse over the last few years, or the Dodger broadcasters and probably others are being more vocal about bad calls. But what do you think? Do you think umpiring isn't as good as it used to be?
Yep. Even better. You know, I mean, the way they're throwing now and as hard as they are and where they don't even know where the goddamn ball's going half the time, it's very difficult to be an umpire now, I think, because the fact people are throwing harder and, you know, they have no respect for deceleration, they're hurting their arms. That's the problem with sport, in my mind, is all these operations. They don't drop and drive like Seaver. They don't drop and drive like Ryan Warren Spahn. They don't drop and drive like Robin Roberts. You know, all the great pitchers I knew, they could pitch 300 innings and stuff because they knew how to pitch. They don't throw. And the game has deteriorated rapidly since 72 because Buckminster Fuller said it best in Operating Manual for Spaceship Earth. All forms of specializations are forms of extinction. You don't want to become over-specialized. You want to be a generalist, and why baseball's great.
Yeah. A lot of front offices, they care more about spin rate and fastball and launch angle and all of that nerdy stuff.
Yeah, because they can't hit.
Well, you were talking about Gaylord Perry and all the capsulin he used. He had capsulin on his elbow and spit on his fingers.
Well, he had KY gel on the lining of his hat, and he used to pull it down. And then he used his two fingers on his forehead and grab his thumb, which had a little bit of pine tar and stuff underneath the thing. So he had friction on one thumb and no friction on the other two. Yeah, he was pretty much unhittable. I bunted on him all the time. I beat him in San Diego one time, and he threw his glove at me.
So Bill, I wanted to talk to you about your pitches. You mm-hmm. the Ephus pitch, and I think they called it the Leafus pitch.
Well, they named it Leafus. It was the Ephus, but the Ephus was actually thrown like a shot put kind of. Mine was a breaking ball that had really big arc, good rotation, and I threw it with the Savannah Bananas religiously, and I can throw it for strikes, and I throw out first pitches in ball games to this day. And I'll be pitching on Sunday in Fort Myers, 75 and over national championship. And I throw the Ephus, and they can't hit it. They can't hit it far, let's put it that way. I only gave up one, and that's Perez. You can't throw it out of a stretch. You have to throw it out of a windup, first of all. You got to throw your hips back. You got to get over the top, and you got to drop it right on home plate.
Yeah. I like that. It. Because it preserves the arm, right?
It does. It preserves curveball. See, Lomberg and I fought for all the time. He's a dentist. He went to Stanford. I went to SC. He said the breaking ball, you shouldn't teach the breaking ball early because it's bad. And I said, no, the breaking ball is like Spanish. You better learn it in the third grade.
Jim is still around.
Yeah, and Jim is still around, and we still argue about everything because he's a Stanford boy. But his son, it loves me. His son's left-handed and got a little autism, and he just loves me, huh?
The problem, and we've had trainers and we've had folks on this program, and I've heard for years that it is not a good idea to have kids, even 16, 15, 16, throwing breaking balls, and that's why we have we've got all of these Tommy John surgeries for kids in high school and college.
But it's wrong. It's not the curveball. It's the breaking ball. The curveball is not a breaking ball. It is a separate entity where your arm is cocked. You have a 90-degree angle with your hand and your wrist. You have a 90-degree angle with your elbow and a 90-degree angle with your shoulder. And all it is like a lever, you know, and it's a catapult that you're throwing over, and your wrist, the elbow never comes into the medial collateral ligament, which you tear, doesn't even come into friction there. It's totally isolated, and that's the difference. See, it's all linguistics. What they call now a sweeper. You know, what the hell's a sweeper? Is a bunch of girls in Sweden at a curling match.
So you're saying it's the breaking pitch separate yeah. From the curveball that is causing the problem.
A cutter, yeah, cutter or a slider. Anything that you snap down hard with an angle like that, with a 40, not a 90 degree, but a 45, then you have your medial epicondylitis and you got it. I mean, Curlin and Job and I, we used to talk all the time on that. You know, Koufax had a curve. He didn't have a slider. You know, no. The slider is what gets you. Full extension out there. That you shouldn't throw when you're having growth spurts in children. You got to know when your growth spurt's coming. And you, I mean, I hurt my elbow. I hurt my elbow between 12 and 13 by going from 45 to 60 feet. And my dad shut me down. And I never hurt my elbow.
Hmm. So Koufax is, because I was saying earlier, I'm reading the Jane Levy book about Sandy Koufax, who was my idol. So his elbow issues, because he only threw a fastball and a curve. So what exactly. What did Curlin and Job say about his elbow problem?
Oh, the fastball. The fastball is hyperextension. You slip sometimes, thinking on a wet field and stuff like that, and you get a little micro tear. Curlin used to say, you got micro tears all the time down there, your sheaths and stuff like that. You know, he says, your elbow's pretty much intact. Your delivery, you pronate properly. You know, and if you look at it, all pitchers, they pronate. And when you try not to pronate, that's when you get in problems. You know, and pronation is natural, and, you know, it's just throw that, you know, the Carl Hubble. I had a Hubble fadeaway, and that's, you have to have the fadeaway, you got to have the slow deuce, you got to have a four seamer you can keep up and in, and a two seam sinker with gravity and the Coriolis effect, and you'll pitch in the big leagues.
There are a lot of pitching.
You don't have to throw as hard as they're throwing today to get batters out.
No, you don't. You never have. You know, there's a lot of guys that had bad arms. They had to lift their pitching hand with their glove to get up there, and they still pitched and won ball games. You know, because it's when you look like you're throwing hard and you don't, it's hard to hit.
The Giants used to have a junk ball pitcher who drove the Dodgers nuts named Stu Miller. I don't think Stu Miller ever threw faster than 80 miles an hour.
He had four changeups. Stu Miller was the only pitcher to be blown off the mound at Candlestick and Bach.
I remember that.
Yeah.
In the All-Star game.
And Bill, I broadcast for 12 years in the minor leagues. And, you know, in 12 years in the teams I was employed by, we had exactly one pitcher who could throw 95, and he didn't have a clue where the ball was going, but we kept him.
No, he didn't.
we kept him. The teams kept him because he could throw 95. And in 2000, when we had him, 95 was about as high as it was going to go. Nobody was throwing 100, 22, 23, 24 years ago. And now suddenly.
Not really, Don, no.
They time it differently now. It comes out of your hand. It's going 100. By the time it gets to the plate, it's only doing about 93. You know, all this stuff. It's the same thing.
You didn't have the injuries in 2000 that you have today. I really believe we weren't meant to throw 100 plus mph. I don't think that's what God intended for us to do.
No. The front offices don't seem to know that, Don.
Well, it's surgeries, everything. It's money in there. There's money to be made in that hill, Johnson. You know, there's Christians down in that valley, Johnson.
Well, you know, baseball may go on strike in another year, so this ought to be interesting what's going to happen with things like the salary cap and I hope they address this problem with injury. That's a major problem in baseball, in my opinion. Well, you got guys getting paid millions of dollars who had Tommy John surgery, who can't pitch for about 18 months, and they're getting paid to do nothing.
Yeah, I know. I had a shoulder surgery after nettles threw me on the ground, and, you know, I had a acromioclavicular separation, and then it metastasized into a strained rotator cuff. And
1976, May of 76. I remember that was a skirmish.
That was the worst brawl in baseball at the time, and you know, and they had a vendetta out on me. I found out later when I came back, Martin sent a paper bag to my locker when I first started against the Yankees back at Fenway, and it was two dead mackerel. It said, "Put this in your purse, you California faggot."
Oh, gee.
Yeah. See, he hated me, and I didn't really like him. I always said, when you meet Billy Martin, don't have your arms crossed or your hands in your pocket.
What was the issue that Billy Martin had, if you don't mind my asking?
It happened in Texas during they were trying to speed up the game with the 22nd rule, and Hargrove and Fisk were, Hargrove was hitting, Fisk was catching. Those are two rain delay guys. And every time they hit 20 seconds, I took a bat down and I pounded it on a step on the visiting dugout. And I go, strike one. And Hargrove would step out. He'd adjust his thumb thing. He'd do it again. And then at 20 seconds, I go, strike two. And Martin started hanging in the opposite lock, the ball. He started hanging like a monkey, scratching his arms and making fun of me and throwing his hat. And, I think his name was Colbert. The owner got rid of him the next day, and I think he hated me because of that.
Hmm.
But things that, you know, you never know. He was a pain in the ass. Have you ever read, what's his name? Oh, Schopenhauer. He was a writer for the Texas Rangers. Called
Mike Schropshire.
Seasons in Hell.
Great book. Yeah. Wonderful book.
Oh, yeah. The greatest opening in the history of baseball books.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put it down after that.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can't.
Shropshire. Yeah. That's
the man was Fort Worth Star Telegram. And boy, there's some of a lot of stuff in there I can't repeat on the air. But boy, would I like to.
Oh, my God. No, you can't. The fact that he brought a whole gunny sack of marijuana down and sat up on the top of Pompano smoking dope the whole spring training.
And that's where I made my debut, was in Pompano in 1991. And he said a lot
see
of
how we're all connected.
Terrible
yeah,
things
see,
about
I
that stadium.
That.
But I say, hey, I made my debut there. How can I dislike that stadium? That's where I first was a broadcaster in 1991.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. Good for you. Yeah.
You know,
I love every park.
Your 22nd story reminded me, and I can't think of the guy's name, Bob or Mike, Michael, maybe one of you guys knows, or Don. There used to be a pitcher not more than about 10 years ago, and they called him the human rain delay.
Oh, Perfidio Perez? No,
Mike Hargrove. That was the
human rain delay. This was this century. This would have been in the last 10 years or so. He was called
the human rain.
I think
what team did he pitch for?
I think he pitched for the Mets, or Mets and Cubs. When you said that, that's what that reminded me of. And Doc Ellis, there was a story that Doc Ellis pitched a shutout when he was with the Padres, and he was on drugs, and it was more than just marijuana.
He said, acid.
Yeah, he was on acid.
He's from Compton. He's from Compton. When his lips are moving, he's lying.
I didn't know Doc Ellis was from this area. Okay.
Oh, yeah, he's from that. Hey, you ever read, it's Doc Ellis and the Kingdom of Baseball by a guy named Hall. He was a poet laureate from.
No, I've never read that.
Yeah, that's the book to read. You read Donald Hall, Doc Ellis and the Kingdom of Baseball. His poetry, it is spectacular.
That ought to be good.
Anyway, yeah. Pretty soon we're going to be bringing in our participants. We have listeners on the call right now who may want to talk to Bill Lee, our guest here on Sports Roundtable. This is, by the way, episode 416, dated Monday, November 10th, 2025. What I'd like to do is to ask Trish, our facilitator, if there are any hands raised from anybody who wants to talk to Bill Lee.
We have two hands currently. The first one
okay,
is
who
Gene
are they?
John. First one is Gene Johnson, followed by Troy.
And he's a Sox fan. Gene's a Sox fan. Hi, Gene.
Hey, Bob and Bill. I wanted to get your thoughts on prop betting, Bill, especially with the whole thing that just happened this morning. Is it Luis Ortiz and
Luis Ortiz and Brian Clase.
Hi, Luther. That's Emmanuel Clase.
Yeah, Emmanuel Clase. Yeah. They're the Guardians closer. And by the way, that actually was during, I think game three of the Guardians Pirates series, and I think Cleveland was in Pittsburgh when that went down.
But anyway, I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on that. I mean, Bob had mentioned, you know, it's all about, you know, the stats and whatnot. And I'm honestly saying that I somewhat disagree with that, because it's not, it's more about, the money behind it.
And by the way, those guys, and Gene, before you move on, they got paid, from what I heard, they got paid by the people that were doing this a measly $7,000.
Yeah.
$7,000.
And they're going to be in prison for 10 years at least, you know?
And I think, I heard 65 as well. If all the charges stick.
Yep. That's amazing.
No kidding.
It's ignorant.
I can only imagine, once they figure out this NBA thing, if that's going to go higher than that with Terry Rozier and Chauncey Billups and everything that they got going on there. So the MLB and the NBA.
What doesn't help, guys, is that you've got a network now called the Betting Network. I forgot the exact name of the network.
There's VSiN, there's BetMGM, there's a whole lot.
That's the one, BetMGM.
Yeah, BetMGM, yeah.
That encourages this.
Well, look at all the commercials that are on every game that we see now.
FanDuel here's the thing though. I guess my point is like, you know, if betting has been always a part of sports since sports has been around. I think the problem I think that now it's become is that everyone's glorifying every little thing about it. There's no, you know, there's no general betting, like, you know, win or lose, or, you know,
well, yeah,
so many games out of so many games, for example. It's now all about, like, you know,
what, like, who's going to get the first touchdown? Is this kicker going to make this kick? Is the under going to hit? Is this
those are called prop betting, and I'm not sure that that's really honestly sports related. It has nothing to do with sports.
Well,
in my opinion.
if it may not, but here's the problem. When they allowed this to actually start and everything go down, that's when it got crazy. And I know probably Mr. Lee was probably pitching back in his day. It was probably going on, but it wasn't like as prevalent as it was now, because it was probably dealt with a lot of bookies back then.
Yeah, like, it was bookies back then. I played with bookies. I played with a bunch of gambling guys. Teddy Mansulo, the only Italian bookie in Brockton. And, you know, the Winter Hill gang allowed him there because he was a baseball player and a good guy, and they didn't knock him off. And, it's life. I mean, it's capitalism. I mean, I'm a Eugene Debs fan and stuff like that. And this could bring down capitalism to its knees in a way that it should be brought down in some respects. I'm a egalitarian. I believe in, I'm
hard work.
I work hard. I still pitch. I still play. I split my own wood. I wash my own windows. And, I'm a liberal with a gun.
did you ever by chance, I don't know if you got a chance to ever, you know, hear of Jimmy the Greek, because he was pretty big before, you know, his downfall, but they did a 30 for 30 on him. Yes, I don't know how he would fit in today's deal, in today's betting.
Remember the Blackheart scandal?
Oh, yeah.
Remember the Blackheart
1918.
1919. When did
19? No,
I thought it was 19.
It was the Black Sox in 1919.
Yeah. It was 19 because the Sox won it all in 18.
Yeah,
there was
the go-go White Sox or the Black Sox again, and they threw games. Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. Well, then think about it. It's stuff like that. It was a guy named Kaminsky that brought that on by not paying Ciotti for the 30 games that he won and stuff like that. And with, well, not letting him win his 30th game by withholding his last two or three starts. And thereby, then he needed to make that money up. Yeah, you look at Eight Men Out, you know, one of the great books and movies about baseball and stuff. It's the owners brought that on, you know.
Holy cow.
I always look back at the, if you're going to look somewhere, I mean, what was the guy from Cleveland that wanted to have a, buy the Cleveland Indians, but he owned a racetrack and, you know, he wasn't allowed to. But then if you're Galbraith or anybody like that and you own race horses, then you're a sportsman. If you own the track, then you're a gambler. Wow.
Trish, do we have anybody else? Gene, first of all, do you have anything more to add?
Well, I mean, other than the idea that Alex Gredman or Alex Bregman being, going on, leaving his deal, basically. I mean, other than that,
basically
I guess.
Opting out.
Yeah.
He did. Be interesting to see if he can get a long-term deal.
He's going to get picked up. Somewhere.
I think
he was, yes, he opted out of Boston, Bill. He did, yes.
Why? He had a great year.
I know he did.
He was great. He was great. I'll tell you why. He just doesn't like Boston. It's hard. Boston is a difficult town to live in and play in. You know, Manny Ramirez lived in a hotel downtown. And one of the Latin players from Columbia, he lived out of town and he could never find the ballpark. You know, it's a difficult town to live in. You got to be tough to pitch in Boston.
What, like, here's a question for you, because yeah, I know when
kinda sad.
Mr. Lee, when you were pitching, you know, in the big leagues, why do you think it was tough for some guys and better for others on how they were able to be successful, like in a town like a Boston and a New York and other places like that, where they're hard and expect a lot from players? And I know it still happens now, but in your time of playing in the big leagues,
you got to
have two hands.
Oh, thank you, Trish. Hey,
Trish.
All right, so Gene, thanks very much for your contribution as always.
Yeah, no, you got to be tough if you're going to play in Boston.
That's
you
got to sure.
be tough if you're going to play. Certain people can play in certain towns and stuff like that, you know. And it's baseball is a game of failure, and you got to learn to tolerate failure.
Yes, right. You do. I agree with that.
Yeah, that's the whole point of baseball. Yeah, it's a round ball with a round bat, and you got to hit it squarely.
And they say that's the hardest ball to hit because you got to square.
Not everybody can do it.
That's what I'm exactly, and not a lot of folks can pitch it either.
Yeah, Trish, who do we have?
Okay, so as I said, we have two hands. The next one up is Troy Larson.
Troy, oh, he's a Minnesota Twins fan, Bill.
Oh, me too. I beat him 11 times.
Man, Troy, what's up?
I think Derek Shelton, you guys got as your latest manager, I think, last week.
Yes. Derek Shelton. We'll see how he does here. I'm not like overly optimistic right now, so it's kind of like a wait and see thing for me, but. Anyway, I want to get Mr. Bill Lee's thoughts on, a lot of people say 1975 was one of the greatest World Series, but 1991, Minnesota Twins versus the Braves, that was also one of the ever greatest World Series.
Yeah, Jack Morris, John Sports.
Herbie Puckett, yeah, it was.
And then
that was.
Jack,
I don't like
was it?
Al Waven, and I don't like artificial turf.
Well, you know what? There's a lot of fans.
I don't like fans.
Yeah, well,
I don't like fans, period. That's the whole thing, you know?
Well,
I think fans ought to pay to get in the ballpark.
Thank you.
Well, so here's the thing. You know, people may not like the Metrodome, but the Twins won two World Series there, you know.
I think that's like besides what? Skydome. I think those are the only two teams that were in a dome that actually won one, if I'm right. The Twins and the Blue Jays.
I love the manager. When the Minnesota won that year, their manager, I think it starts with a T.
Tom Kelly.
Tom Kelly did not come out of the dugout. He was the greatest manager, and he just was so proud of his boys. I thought he did a tremendous job.
And you know what I liked about that series? I like the fact that he let Jack Morris pitch game. He pitched game seven and he went the distance in a full 10. He didn't have anybody pitch his game. He pitched his game.
Wow. I had a home run off Jack Morris his rookie year with Detroit.
Wow. And that was actually back when pitchers actually hit. before they had the before they actually now had the Universal Deeds.
I hit the last triple by a pitcher in the American League in a regular season game.
Really?
How cool is that?
Holy cow.
Yeah.
By the way,
those are highlights of my life.
By the way, it was Dodgers-Yankees in 81. I don't remember. Yeah. Was Atlanta and Minnesota in 80? Because the Dodgers...
91.
91.
91. Okay.
And I'm trying to think.
Was Dodgers 80. In 81? Why it was the Dodgers? Because Rick Mundy's home run off of Steve Rogers, and I was warming up in the bullpen, and Fanning didn't bring me in.
I was going to ask you about that, Bill. I thought you were with the Expos when Mundy hit his home run.
I was warming up on my own. Fanning hated me.
Wait, so you mean to tell me you were in the pen warming up for a particular batter
warming
and didn't even bring
up
you
on
in?
On my own when. When I saw Rogers go in, I knew he had Jack Diddley, and he gave him a foul home run to stay, and then Lopes hit one off the wall almost, and then they pitch hit Mundy, and I went, before I saw Mundy get down there in the on deck circle, I went down, I threw 11 pitches as hard as I could, and I tapped my hat, and Fanning went out to the mound, saw me, and basically gave me the finger.
Oh, man.
Remember, 1981 was a split season. You had an extra layer of playoff because it was all about first half and second half division winners. There was no wild card per se, but there was an extra layer
like
that
year. Wasn't that like an A, B, and C bracket or something?
It was the first half winner versus the second half winner and so on. The team that got shafted out of all that was Cincinnati.
Sure did.
Yeah, because they had the overall for the season, the best record.
Yes, but they didn't get into the playoffs
because they didn't win either the first half or second half.
The Dodgers won the first half, and I think Houston won the second half.
Yeah, Houston was in the National League back then.
We beat Houston.
Was that when they switched to the Astros, or was that before that? Because I remember at one point.
They were the Astros. They've been the Astros since the mid-60s at least.
Okay, because I remember.
I think they were the Colt 45s
in like 68 when they came in. If I'm right, it was 68.
First 3 years, 62 to 64. They should have kept that name. That's a cooler name than the Astros.
Troy.
Yeah, but.
Yes.
Troy.
The symbol was a gun, so.
Troy, I'll give you Durant and you'll give me Ryan.
I just wonder if the Twins are going to trade their two best starting pitchers this offseason.
If they're trying to get, you know, cap relief and get some, you know, prospects that they can try to develop again and get them to AAA St. Paul, then it's probably going to have to be that.
Probably, but I don't know. Are you going to simply sacrifice, you know, having maybe a couple, you know, I can maybe see one being traded, but not both of them.
Well, who's the second one besides Ryan that
Pablo
they want to
Lopez.
Trade? They do?
Yep. But those were two. Yeah. Pablo Lopez. And actually, personally, I wouldn't mind him trading Lopez. I'm not saying we're going to. I just wouldn't mind it.
I see. Hmm. Well, thank you very much, Troy.
Why did they let Correa go?
Well, Correa was traded to your Houston Astros.
Right, but why did they let him go? Was he not liked in Minnesota?
Probably becoming a mild content because he wanted to play a particular.
Yeah.
I think I heard something he wanted to play a particular.
Well, why did they trade Jackson Durant?
That's what I want to know.
They traded Griffin Jackson. They traded their closer, Durant.
Yeah,
I wonder why they did that.
Yeah, that's what I don't understand. Like, they trade away basically pretty much all very good bullpen pitchers this trade deadline, thinking if they can get a bunch of prospects. Well, prospects are not proven players. They're prospects.
And they're called prospects for a reason because we don't know.
And Troy, Dodger fans will always owe a debt of gratitude to Minnesota for taking James the Outman.
because he's basically lived up to his last name. be out.
That's why we traded him.
Well,
that's why.
Well, there's also a relief pitcher. There is also a relief pitcher in baseball whose last name is Blewett.
Oh, I forgot
what team he's on.
He was on the Twins, I think, for a while, too.
Brewett.
Perfect name for a closer.
Hey, Bob, I think there's one more hand.
I think there is.
So, yes, Troy, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Yeah. And we'll see what happens in the offseason. I'm looking forward to getting Joe Ryan.
Oh,
but what do I know?
The offseason is off.
Anyway. Yeah, well, I actually hope we don't trade Joe Ryan. That's the guy I hope we don't trade.
Okay. Trish, do we have anybody else for Bill?
We do. Matthew is next.
Okay, Matthew, welcome.
Welcome. I don't know. I'm doing a lot of baseball talking. Thought we were in football season.
Are you a football fan, Bill?
USC Trojans, yeah, but they're coming back.
Do you have a guest on today?
Bill Lee, Red Sox pitcher from the 60s and 70s, also pitched for the Expos.
Yes.
Oh,
almost
wow.
Punted for the New England Patriots in 72.
Oh,
people don't know that. Yeah, I was a
punter. I don't know.
Great guy.
Way before I was brought into this world. well, that's cool that you're here.
I went to school with O.J. Simpson at USC.
Oh, okay.
That's me. That's my claim to fame. Orenthal James, he and I were very close, and I feel bad for what happened, and I feel bad for Hollywood. You know, I'm not much of a Hollywood fan.
But, Bill, there were stories about O.J. and Al Cowlings before they came to USC, and I saw all his games. I went to games in 69, 70, and 71, and there were stories about some of the things those fellas did in high school, running a protection racket. I'm sure O.J. was a great guy. He was one of the best runners you'll ever see. But the man seemingly got on the wrong path and stayed there for a while, and it really was too bad.
Yeah, Vic Macia was chief of police of San Francisco, and he did the police athletic league, and he went to Orenthal. He said, Orenthal, don't play football. You'll only get hurt.
Yeah.
Well, we've got a good running back.
It eventually comes around. Right? I said, we're not in control. It's Stephen King's Under the Dome, one of the worst books ever written. But in that book, I'm a murder weapon.
I have to read that.
I have to read that, too.
No, you don't want to read it.
Yeah, you do. Good book. I liked it.
I was gonna get y'all's perspective on my Red Raiders. I know what it is like locally, but I don't know what it's really what the word is out nationally. I've heard some commentators can't even get the coach's name right, which is pretty embarrassing because they're professional newscasters and sportscasters and they can't get the name right. And Joey McGuire, yeah, that calling him McIntyre and Mackin this and Mackin that, but not McGuire. I just kind of wanted to get y'all.
Remember that?
Yeah, show me the money,
show
right?
Show me the money.
Yeah, how tough it is.
I just wanted y'all's, inside on
this show. Yeah, you know who's laughing in this show? Marvin Miller and Pete Rose.
I can see why.
You can see why. Go back when you listen to this. You could see them just dangling in space, laughing. We're all like marionettes with strings to us. That's what I see today. It's a good show, guys. Thanks for having me.
No problem. We got about 3 or 4 more minutes to go. Trish, do we have anybody else?
We do not at this time.
Okay. If you do, just let us know. In the meantime, guys, if you have any final questions for Bill.
Bill, in one quick second, where are you in Vermont? I was in Jamaica, Vermont just last week.
Craftsbury Common, Craftsbury, Vermont. I'm on the ridge just to the west, and the town just to the east of me is called Eden. So I am east of Eden.
Okay.
And it's definitely, I'm a Steinbeck aficionado, and I read all of Steinbeck's books. It's the winner of our discontent.
Mm. Oh. Only read one, but it was classic. Jake Grapes or Rat.
Bill, you're talking about being a USC fan, and I've been to two games, and I'm going to be at the Iowa game Saturday. I think it would be cool for you to lead the football team out of the Coliseum Tunnel one of these games.
Well, they brought me in 2 years ago, and I won the championship in Arizona. I flew in, and I was named Man of the Year, and it was I think it was Cal USC. And but I was named Man of the Year, but I'm not in their Hall of Fame, which is amazing thing because I was 38-8, and that's all I want to do. You know, I've always been a Trojan. My great-grandfather was dean of graduate school there, and Governor Knight named him Mr. California. So I am the great-grandson of Mr. California.
You should be in the Hall of Fame. And unfortunately, I don't know anybody in the athletic department there. I used to have a colleague who was in the development office for the president, but he's long gone. But you deserve to be in the USC Hall of Fame, Sports Hall of Fame.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Any final questions? Don, Luther, Michael? Bill, all I can say is that I started following the Red Sox in 1967 when they had their impossible dream season. Mm-hmm. And you came on the scene, I believe it was in June of 69. You were a relief pitcher back then.
Always. I was inning eaters. Dick Williams brought me up. Dick Williams brought me to Montreal. Dick Williams was the only manager I ever had in the big leagues.
Yeah, he was one of the best. He really, really was.
Seventh, eighth, and ninth inning. He had four relievers left-handed, four relievers right-handed. He knew what he was doing. He was a great chess player and a terrible drinker.
he was one of the best, you know.
He was.
One more quick question. Do you talk to Yastrzemski?
Not much. He doesn't speak very often. He doesn't like people. He smokes Marlboros and he drinks Coors. You know, so I don't like him.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I tolerate him. I think he was a great guy like that, but he was not a team leader.
His grandson's a free agent.
Huh?
His grandson's a free agent.
Is he really?
He's on the list. I Googled it and I found it.
Well, he'll be back in Boston then.
Well, he was with San Francisco, and then he left San Francisco. Mitch, refresh my memory. Where did Mike Yastrzemski go after he left the Giants?
Kansas City.
That's right. Thank you, Bill. Yep, he went to Kansas City. Bill, thanks for being with us today. It was a pleasure. By the way, this is your second appearance. You were on the show back in 2021, I believe.
Wow. I don't say no to anything.
Well, we really appreciate it, Bill, and we'd like to have you back in the future.
I hope I'm around.
And I hope it doesn't snow the 3 inches that you expect it to snow tonight.
No, we want snow. Snow is an insulator.
Okay, well, that's an interesting way to put it.
We train all the Olympians in Craftsbury, cross-country skiing. We are the number one East Coast Craftsbury. We're a cross-country mecca, and we also made a movie called Troubles with Harry Hitchcock. Look it up.
Yeah. Well, thanks again, Bill, for being with us, and we enjoyed your conversation. It was great having you.
Thank you again, boys, and have a good evening.
You too, and thanks to everybody else, and go safe with God's abundant blessings. I'm Bob Branco. Have a great day, everybody.